tangle with the Resistance.
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 90. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about The Last Jedi again. But it's alright, there's a lot more to talk about. As always, I'm Mike B, and I'm joined by my sick co-host, Danya. Hey, Danya.
Hey, everyone. So I'll apologize for the scratchy voice. Now, I'm a little croaky.
Get a cup of tea. That's what you do in England, right? A little cup of tea, biscuits.
Yes, I've had, so many cups of tea today. And yet, I'm still sick. It's always the way. Getting sick right before you've got time off for Christmas. So that, you feel really run down and you spend all of your time off sleeping. It's gonna happen. I guarantee it.
We also have Caitlin joining us this week. Hey, Caitlin.
Hello. I'm back.
I know. And you've seen The Last Jedi. Awesome.
I have.
We're excited to find out what you thought. And Ben, welcome back. You get to join us again.
Again. That sounds like you're tired.
It's such a chore.
And we got Ben again. No, I'm just excited. You're back again. You know?
Yeah, I know.
With all this. Now, Ben, did you see? I sent a message to everybody. And I have to tell them before we get into the episode here. If you start episode 3 at 11:02 p.m. And 48 seconds in on New Year's Eve, Obi-Wan will say, "Hello there," right at midnight. So right at midnight in 2018. And there's nothing better than starting your new year off with a nice hello from our favorite Ben Kenobi. I mean, not our favorite Ben, but Ben Kenobi.
My favorite
you know.
Ben. It's, right? No, it's my favorite Ben. So by
it's
default,
my favorite
it
Ben, too.
Yours.
I'm sorry. You're like my favorite Ben.
No, you're not wrong.
You're there, You're up there, Ben.
Yeah, I actually, so before you sent that one, which I like better, a friend of mine sent me one that says if you start it at whatever time,
the Death Star explodes?
No, Palpatine will say, "I am the Senate."
Yes.
And I was like, "That's a good
I don't
one.
Know. I don't know if I'd want to start the new year with "I am the Senate," but it makes sense
because that means the first thing you see in the new year is Mace Windu's death, which is sad. So, you know.
But hello there. I think I like. Hello anyway. There. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including all the new books that have just come out. Everything from Cobalt Squadron to Canto Bight to Legends of Luke Skywalker. If you haven't read Leia, Princess of Alderaan, check that out. You'll learn a little bit more about Vice Admiral Emmeline Haldo in there. There's just so many books in there that are absolutely phenomenal, so definitely take a look at that if you like audiobooks or you just like listening to something while driving that's not music. We also have launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, and After Dark episodes, including I will probably start doing some video blogs for myself just so these random thoughts I have because I don't know where to put them. So you might get to see my wonderful face talking to you Patreon members about Star Wars or anything else that you want to know about. I don't know what else I can say, but I might do something like that. And if you can't support us via Patreon, you can check out our merch that we have on sale at resistanceradio.net. We have some cool t-shirts and buttons available on our website. And I think it's time for the news. Now, Caitlin, you put most of this news in here, so I'm gonna go to you a lot for some of this news. But I really like this first one here. George Lucas had some influence over the new trilogy. Now we've known this for a while that he had an original treatment for episode 7, 8, and 9 that some of it, you know, and that had been leaked out before episode 7 came out. But there are some interesting tidbits of his original treatment that is tied into episode 7 and episode 8. What do you guys think about this news?
Not entirely surprised. Horizon?
Yeah, it's kind of. I feel like I've read this already, but 10 years ago. It's kind of stuff we knew, but it's coming to the surface now.
I think it's
you might have known that that's what he planned, but the fact that we have a comparison with both episode 7 and 8 now.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think Disney kind of decided to break up his original trilogy into multiple episodes. Like when you look at Kira, who is the young girl who is supposed to become, who wanted to become a Jedi, which is essentially became Rey. She goes to find Luke inside a Jedi temple. I love seeing some of the concept art that was there before he sold, you know, Lucasfilm to Disney. But it, you know, it's very similar to it. Like a lot of the concepts are, like, I will tell you, Ahch-To almost looks like the temple planet. So I definitely think it's, you know, there's definitely some influences there. Just like we saw in even Rogue One, we had the original Ralph McQuarrie drawing of Chewbacca is one of the things inside the cantina. Actually, it wasn't even Rogue One. It was in Episode 7, Force Awakens. You know, it's in Moss's castle. The original artwork of Chewbacca made its way in there as a new alien species. So I definitely like that George Lucas still has a play into it. Like I said, I think when we talked about who would be doing Episode 9, I think I was probably the only one who said it'd be fun to have George Lucas kind of come back and do it. But maybe that's just me being Mikey.
I think being George my Lucas has like the like the head of story would be cool, but writing and directing should be somebody else. Like I don't know. I feel like, because I mean, he tried to get other writers and directors on for the prequels, but they were like, "No, it's Star Wars. We can't do that." And then he's like, "Fine, I'll just do it myself." And look what happened.
Yeah, but
the story. Well,
he wanted to do them all himself because he was excited for the new technology. Because you know, the prequels were some of the first films done in all digital. They were shot digital back then, even though they were only So it's interesting.
It is. But I definitely think the story of the prequels is great. I love the way it's constructed and everything. I just don't think it's well executed from a dialogue and directorial standpoint. So I think, yeah, if they brought George Lucas back on and he was just like, this is what's going to go down, and then bring on, you know, other people, that'd be nice. I'd like that.
Yeah. Moving on, fans have been kind of... you have a love-hate relationship with Star Wars, obviously. I'll tell you, I think fans have been a little decisive about this episode here. Some like it, some don't like it. But yeah, feisty fans. I personally loved it, regardless of, you know, any negative opinions of it. I still enjoyed the film, regardless. But the really cool thing is, between Rogue One and latest film, there is a throwaway line that was tied together and was confirmed by none other than Pablo Hidalgo. Basically, they're going through the on Scarif, they're going through Scarif, the database on Scarif, there's a line about hyperspace tracking navigational systems. And that's actually from the Tarkin Initiative, which was a think tank, Imperial think tank done by none other than Wolf Tarkin, and Hux went ahead and they perfected it. So the hyperspace tracking that was a huge plot point in The Last Jedi is actually mentioned in Rogue One. What'd you guys think about this? All just tying together.
I love it. I love it when they like connect it, but not in ways that are like completely obvious, so it doesn't feel like they're like...
That's very J.K. Rowling of them.
Yeah, it's not like a huge like elbow kind of like, did you see?
Nudge.
Yeah, it's more of a, this is a concept that was already introduced in an earlier film that has been brought back and capitalized on. So it is an idea that was introduced much earlier in the timeline that perhaps hadn't been perfected or fully researched, but has now become possible, like, much, much further down the line via the First Order, which is...
And I kind of like that there is that history, that it took them that long to figure out, because that's like some intense like physics and math, and like there would have been a lot to do and to get it right and to test it out. So I'm glad that between like all the years between Rogue One and The Last Jedi, that it took them that long, or technically The Force Awakens, it took them that long to actually figure it out and make it work so that they could actually use it.
Yeah, and they did use it also in Rebels too, I think in the first season of Rebels, if I remember correctly. But it wasn't as accurate, and they weren't always able to follow it. So it is nice to see that these things are you know, it, obviously it's canon, it's brought into the myth of, you know, Star Wars, but it's used multiple times, and not just in one spot to move the plot forward. I will say a really cool pro tip from Pavel Hidalgo after that was pointed out. He says, unsolicited pro tip, if something doesn't seem on the surface to move the plot forward, try looking at what it might be doing to a character, e.g. Luke rushes off to save his friends in Empire Strikes Back, only to need rescue himself, and thus further endangering his friends. So, it definitely is one of those things where there is definitely a lot of things that they've planted through a lot of things. So I'm happy with that. I also like that there's also an idea that possibly the golden dice that we have in The Last Jedi will be explored more in the Han Solo film.
I mean, it's kind of expected, right?
What the significance behind them actually is. I figured that is something that we would come back to. Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed such an oddly specific thing to put in the film when it hadn't been something we'd focused on previously. Yeah. So there has to be some kind of story behind the significance.
Right. Well, that, and also, I mean, because there's that moment in Force Awakens where when Han first boards the Falcon for the first time in forever, the first thing he does is put the dice up on at the top of the cockpit, which means that when he either lost the Falcon years before, he grabbed those before he gave it up or left it or whatever happened. I don't know. That means they're important enough to him that he would want them even if he can't have the Falcon. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the story, the quote from Hidalgo from a Vanity Fair interview was, the story that you would hear if you traveled to cantinas or watering holes around the Star Wars galaxy is that those dice were involved in a game of Carillion Spike, a dice version of a card game called Sabacc. Rumor has it Han won the Millennium Falcon with those dice. Whether or not that's just bar talk, he can't say.
So maybe they're Lando's dice.
That'd be awesome if Lando originally had the dice and he beat Lando in the game and took the dice and the Falcon. That would be fun. I think it would be...
And that means that technically a piece of Lando was actually in The Last Jedi.
Oh, if snap. It was oh, Lando.
Yeah.
Lando Calrissian. I can't wait till the Solo film. Anyway... The Last Jedi deleted scenes. Rian Johnson has talked in an interview talking about the deleted scenes, and there's about 20 minutes of deleted scenes in the can that we'll get, hopefully we'll get, when Blu-ray digital versions are available of The Last Jedi. Speaking of Last Jedi digital download, you can actually pre-order it on iTunes already. Did you know that?
Yeah, iTunes has been doing that recently.
I know. I have it pre-ordered, so it's just going to automatically download to all my devices as soon as it's available, which I think is kind of cool. Especially
Wait,
since you know,
paid to pre-order the movie before you're done paying for tickets to go see the movie.
Yeah, I have a Star Wars budget, okay? And I'm like, you know, and I'm here I'm at. I'm like, only you know what? Mikey. Here we are. I have the money. Let me go ahead and buy the movie now. Well, I also bought like iTunes gift cards for Christmas gifts and stuff like that, and I got them on a deal, and I'm like, "Hey, I have money on my account. Let me just buy the movie now." So that's what happened. So, but yeah, so I thought that was really cool. But there's about 20 minutes of deleted scenes, including an extended scene between Finn, Rose, and DJ, where they sneak through the Mega Destroyer. What do you guys think how this thing would play out? Like, is this something you'd want to see? Like, I know people already complain that the film is a little long, but an additional 20 minutes is quite a bit to cut out.
I think
I'm more interested in another one.
Between,
further down.
Yeah, I was about to kind of go on the same thing. As much as I kind of love the dynamic, the Finn-Rose DJ dynamic, I think I feel like they had, for a not main storyline, they had enough scenes. You know, I thought they had enough in the movie as it was. So like I'm kind of like, oh, this will probably be just a deleted scene that feels like a deleted scene. Maybe should be a deleted scene. Because they said it was like the first to go.
Yeah, the editor was like, this is the first thing to cut out to keep the story going where it is.
After watching it, I'll probably be like, yeah,
three
I
more additional deleted scenes are between Luke and Rey on Ahch-To, kind of a training sequence. Another one with Rey and the Caretakers, which I think I kind of want to see Rey and the Caretakers. Yeah. I feel like that's going to just be a fun comedy kind of joke. That'd maybe them cool. yelling at her. And then also a scene between Finn and Poe.
Yes.
I'm kind of excited to see if this is like more like, I don't, just kind of a joke, because like, you know, I think they already had enough kind of jokes between the two of them, but I'm kind of excited to see where this Finn and Poe scene actually ties in.
Yeah.
You
know,
like, is it like, yeah, you see Poe, you see Finn getting his clothes on after he's getting the, you know, wonderful Bacta, I don't know, you know, liquid, you know, bath
bubble suit,
bubble suit off, and he's bringing Finn up to speed on what's going on, why he's been in a coma. Like, yeah, so you've been out of it for like all of like a day, and this is what's going on, buddy.
Hmm. I kind of understand why that would be taken out too, because the audience already knows what went on.
If you saw The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree with you. The audience already knows it's meant to kind of move us forward. Last bit of news before we dive into our spotlight topic, because I want to give us plenty of time to talk about none other than The Last Jedi all over again, is, I know, right? Is the shooting name for episode 9 is called Black Diamond. Now, probably
Mikey, I have a question.
Yes.
So the name is given so that it can draw less attention to production, right?
Correct.
So why would they tell us the name of production?
It was uncovered. They didn't tell us. It was uncovered.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just like, now,
okay, so now good. They have We're to good. Change it.
That's yeah, all I needed answered.
Like, well, because here's the thing. It's like everyone knows that they shoot under it. So like a good example is probably the most well-known one is Blue Harvest was the original shooting name of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's Blue Harvest. And then Family Guy made an episode called Blue Harvest, which was their Star Wars episode. Rogue One was Los Alamos. The Last Jedi was called Space Bear. And Solo was Red Cup.
Red Cup.
Which they obviously have some fun kind of play into it. So this was called Black Diamond. And I find it interesting because there's not really any connection between them really at all. So it's just kind of a fun name that will hopefully allow them to book stuff under. Be, you know, it's a working title. Sometimes you'll see Star Wars themed gear with these titles on them. But you know, sometimes it's not, it's mostly for crew or casting crew. And
is
stuff.
It just me, but I feel like Space Bear is in reference to Luke and his grumpy attitude.
Yeah.
Are you saying like a grizzly?
Yeah. Well, cause like Los Alamos, like that was referenced to the atomic bombing site, which is why Rogue One got it.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, Space Bear, I just think grumpy old Luke. As Brack says, he was hibernating.
Yeah, he metaphorically was hibernating all through The Force Awakens. Yeah,
see, the thing is whenever anyone says bear in reference to a man like that, I don't think of, like, the animal bear.
I know where you're going with that.
Hey, that's all I'm saying. Everyone else can draw their own conclusions.
Well, whatever works.
Yeah. Some of the comments on this as it was released is one person says Black Diamond may be referring to the black kyber crystal that was found in Vader's castle. So we'll see if JJ tries to pull that together. Another person Vader, says Black Diamond may refer to difficulty of pulling the story together, like navigating a Black Diamond downhill ski course or something like that.
Oh, God. Yeah, those are horrible.
Oh, hey, I never thought about that.
Or maybe we're just going. Maybe we're all.
I know
just going
they're going
to
back
Hoth.
To Hoth.
I know, right? Maybe. Hey, maybe my prediction of Finn opening up an ice cream stand on Hoth is still true. We never know. So Black Diamond is the shooting name of it. We'll see what
Wait,
it is.
That would make sense because Finn and Rose couple name is Frozen, and they could be Frozen Ice Cream Stand. Okay.
Seriously, that's their ship name?
Yeah, because Finn and Rose froze, frozen.
Oh, boy.
And that's their ice cream stand name.
Oh boy, Ben.
Welcome
let's
to
move
Frozen's
on.
Ice cream.
Let's move on to our spotlight topic. I'm just gonna leave that there. And we're gonna move up. All right. So
leave it floating in space.
We're just gonna leave it there. So we're gonna start off real quick because one, Caitlin didn't get to give us her initial opinion thoughts on the film, so we're gonna do that. But before we do that, we'll kind of, Caitlin, you're gonna get to go last on this one. How many times have you seen the film so far, Danya?
Three
times. Ben, you
also three,
and I've seen it three. And any opinions, thoughts on the film, on additional viewings of the film?
It continuously improves every time I see it. Like, there's more. There's so much to think about with this film, and it's really hard to wrap your head around it with just one viewing. I think reason it's been as divisive. Yeah, I know. You're as sick. Divisive.
You get a pass.
I know. As divisive as it has been is because a lot of people are making snap judgments off their first viewing. And I feel like it's a film that doesn't conform to expectations. And a lot of the people that I've seen who haven't really liked it had like an idea in their head of what they wanted and what they expected out of this film, and the reason they're so mad is because it doesn't fit that. You know, they've spent so long theorizing and coming up with like ideas of like who is Snoke, who is Rey, what's going on. It's very much I feel like if you have been very heavily involved in fandom, if you are involved in like certain fan activities like writing meta or deep dives, or if you have read or written fan fiction or anything like that, you have a much healthier separation of playing and speculating in a sandbox versus wanting or expecting that to happen in the actual material. Like, I feel like for a lot of people, this was their first experience with getting involved in that kind of conversation and not being able to separate their own theorizing and their own version of the story in fandom with what they actually get. And I think that's where a lot of the sort of backlash has come from, is that they've never had to reckon with that before. They're like, the more involved in fandom you have been throughout your life, the less of an issue that you have moving from having 2 years to come up with theories into this is what is actually happening.
Well, like, if I can jump off that, like, initially, like, I had multiple reactions while I was watching this, but, like, in the sense that when they, for example, when they reveal Rey's parentage.
Luke's daughter, right? It's,
when you kind of expect everything to have significance, it's a little bit of a letdown when it isn't. But at the same time, from a story perspective, it is really nice to not like everything doesn't have to be from something else. Like, it can just be, and it gives it room to breathe and grow on its own, because technically, if you think about it, Anakin Skywalker, he came from nothing too. He just
what are you talking was. About he was born of the Force. He came literally from the Force.
Okay, so
I'm giving you a hard time. His mother was a slave.
Yeah, I know.
So essentially, like, he came from a very similar background from Rey, other than the fact that she had a biological father.
And she does, but she doesn't hate him. She doesn't hate San like he does. She likes Jakku.
To jump off that actually even more, I think the biggest reservation I had coming out the first time I saw the movie was the fact that we got answers to the big questions we had, but it's almost like comparing it to maybe like the first time you read, you know, Half-Blood Prince or Deathly Hallows or something, where like you got answers to the big questions, and maybe it wasn't what you were expecting, but it was equally as like had as much gravity as the answer you kind of wanted. Whereas here it was like, oh, your parents are nobody. Also, Snoke dies halfway through the movie. Like, and all these huge things we were expecting were very, like, they weren't giant kind of... they didn't have what we wanted. They didn't have, like, the oomph we wanted from them. And so the fact that we didn't get that was kind of like, oh, did this movie mean anything? And so going in the second time, I was like, oh, this movie is so much better than I thought it was, because I went in knowing and having those expectations kind of, like, dumped down.
Removed. I will tell you, well, like, on second and third showing, like, I can tell you exactly what I got out of each additional showing. After this, for the second showing, because I had listened to the soundtrack more, I appreciated Finn and Rose's theme significantly more. Yeah. Like, I noticed it the first time I watched it, but, like, the repetition of it throughout the film was really, really nice, and I enjoyed it. The music they used for Vice Admiral Holdo, I almost kind of wish it was actually the Jurassic Park theme song at some points, since it was all John Williams. But
or maybe
for
this, the Raptor motif.
Yeah, something like little, that. But, yeah, you know, like I said, it was really nice, like, just being able to really take in the music with Star Wars, because that's such a huge part of Star Wars. And so on the second showing is when I got to appreciate that. So I think that's what made
the first showing.
that's why I enjoyed the second time. But on the third time, I got to notice a lot of little things. And I also, because I had been thinking about it, again, you know, we did our first episode reaction to this was that morning. We had all just seen it once. You know, none of us had seen it a second time yet. But by the third time, I had been able to reflect on it. And I really enjoyed the parallels to Empire Strikes Back. Because it was one of those things where, you know, you kind of caught some of them, obviously, like, Rey going into the cave is like Luke going into the cave on Dagobah. Like, there's a lot, like, well,
she
obvious
sees herself,
parallels.
Just like
self,
Luke.
Which is just like Luke, did, you know, but it's done in a different way. But then, you know, I think my original comments during last week's episode were talking about, like, I didn't like some of the humor. But as I really reflected on Empire Strikes Back and the pacing and the humor and the jokes and everything that was kind of done in that, as well as, like, the parallels between things like of Rey's training, Luke's training. I just mentioned it earlier during the news of, like, Luke going off doing something he was told not to do, go confronting Vader to save his friends. Luke did, Rey did the same thing to go and try to convince Ben not to go to the dark side when Luke told her not to. He even says it's not going to go the way you think. You know, Luke has learned from his past mistakes. So there's so many parallels between the two, and I appreciate it so much for it. Because it is a Star Wars film, but it definitely feels unique and fresh as a Rian Johnson film. And I think that's why I like The Last Jedi. And I will say, like, if I had to rate this today versus the way I rated it on the first day, the first episode last week, I would say it's probably moved up one or two spots in the hierarchy of Star Wars films. Because after seeing it two times, I've gone to appreciate it. Maybe it's like a fine wine. The longer you see it, you know, the more it says, the better it gets. But I really enjoyed it that way.
And the fact that they're... Sorry, Donnie, go ahead.
I still stand by my thought from last episode, which is that I'm not sure that I can rank The Last Jedi the way that I've been able to the other Star Wars films, even having seen it a few times now. I will say that its rewatchability is much higher than I thought.
I'm getting a little bit.
It was going to be like it's a much easier rewatch.
Oh, what are you?
Than,
I don't know. It's a fan version
that I originally anticipated, but
like Red Lobster.
It's a film that you really have to continue to think about, and you really have to be switched on to it. And so I feel like in a lot of ways, I can't rate it. I can't rank it against the other Star Wars movies because it's so out of the norm. But I feel like for me, in terms of enjoyability, in terms of like just really genuinely enjoying it, it would be quite high up, I think, in terms of, like, if I was going to reach for a film, a Star Wars film to watch, it would be quite high up on
that
list. Yeah,
I'm kind of with you. I'm with you on that.
Of ones that I would want to go back and revisit. And I think a lot of that comes down to there's so many layers to it. So I continuously want to keep going back to it to learn more. Because mm-hmm. every time I've watched it, I've seen something new. Or the way that I've interpreted a scene one time, I interpret it slightly differently. Or how I felt about certain characters has shifted. Or even just in general, like the storylines particularly are so strong. But if you look at it on just the surface level from the first time that you watch it, you know, it's a lot deeper than it's being given credit for, I think. But yeah, I'm having like a really tough time fitting it into like a traditional ranking of like
Star Wars movie. I'm sure you'll be able to in a year's time after we've watched it and you've memorized the words like you have with the other films. I will say, on additional watchings, I've come to the conclusion that Poe is a whiny baby, and he really just needed to listen to Emmeline Haldo, and he caused all the death that happened. And I'm really disappointed, because I love
Finn. But at least
Finn.
He still learns.
He does learn, and that's what I love, but like I said, you know, like, I was so disappointed, I'm like, come whiny. On!
Like,
I know. He had a very good growth in this film, so that way, by the next film, he'll be the new learning. But, I was so like disappointed as I watched him more and more. I'm like, just stop. Anyway, so moving.
I kind of love Poe in this movie. Like, I know exactly what you're saying, but like, you know, at the same time, I'm kind of just his, especially that scene where they're explaining to him, like, this is what we have to do. And he's like, so we blow that up. And they're like, no. That kind of stuff. It's like, it was. Most of the things he did were played for laughs, and that's why I really enjoyed him. But
yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I feel like he even said like it's a need to know basis, like with his plan, and it's like, come on, dude. Like,
well, okay,
yeah, he was being a little bit petulant at that point.
Yeah. I mean, like, it wasn't the right choice to make, but I totally understand why he made it.
I know, I get why he made it, but at the same time, like, Haldo is like, he just the last thing that. But all their leader did was demote him for being a hothead and not listening to it. Like, why would you trust someone like that? Now, you know, I don't think he needed to know everything, but I do think at one point he's like, well, what is our plan? And she's when she said filling up the ships, the escape ships, I think she probably could have said, we are going to go to an old rebel base. Like, I think she should have said something there, but for the rest of it, I was kind of like, oh well. Anyway, let's go down our list of questions we have here for The Last Jedi. So, Caitlin, before we dive into that, what is your initial thoughts? I know you kind of said some of it, but what are your initial thoughts? Other, we haven't heard about it. So tell us.
Yeah, there's
other
things I wanted to mention, but it's kind of hard to talk about it without just bringing it right to the conversation. So I definitely had, I guess, all the reactions I was supposed to while watching it. Like, there was giggles and like gasps of shock and like anger when I was supposed to be angry and like tear up moments when I was supposed to. And then I came out of it and kind of went, what the hell did I just watch? Because not that it's a bad thing, but there was just so much, and my brain just could not process it all after the fact. So I'm really excited that I get to see it again this coming weekend. Because
and again the weekend after that.
And yeah, weekend and after that.
Until it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, I guess, or digital. I don't know. What do people buy nowadays?
Unless you...
that's another spotlight topic.
I was also going to say, unless you rate or rank stuff for the Oscars or have anything to do with the Oscars, some people got their copies already.
Ooh.
I know who I have to talk to. Tweeted about it.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and we'll dive into some of your breakdown in just a minute, Caitlin. But so I do want to talk about this. This film, I feel, is a little bit more emotional than some of the other films. And I don't know if that's because of the story or of the actors or the actress specifically, at least for me, that's in the film. So I want to talk about a few of those scenes. So question is, how many times did you tear up and get emotional in this film? Like, did you feel that connection?
A lot.
A few times. And there are two places in the film that I very consistently had, like, a very strong emotional response to it. Like, I had, like, weird responses to seeing Leia and Carrie Fisher. Like, that was, like, the first time I feel like it was more difficult to watch it, just because it was, like, a constant reminder that she's no longer with us. But the second and third time I saw the film, there were two places specifically that I just, like, felt myself, like, either tearing up or I actually cried. And that was the scene with the bombers at the start with Paige. That scene, every time.
That was impressive considering we had no emotional attachment to anything yet. I agree with you.
Yeah. It's hard. That scene was harder. I mean, I knew that that was Rose's sister because obviously I went into the film having done a lot of research into who Paige was and that sort of thing. So I knew who Paige was going in. I knew that that was Rose's sister. So I had that knowledge. But going into it in the second and third viewing of this film that I did, knowing what Rose's reaction to it was, her grief and everything like that, their relationship via what we see Rose say and do through the rest of the film, that made that scene significantly harder emotionally to cope with on subsequent viewings.
I'll agree 100%. I think beyond that scene, because that definitely got to me, even just the very first showing, as soon as I realized who it was, you know, obviously we do a Star Wars podcast, so we know a little bit about the film before it happens, and I knew exactly who it was, and then seeing Rose in response, you know, crying about it, it just, like, it hit me. But I will say that the next emotional scene for me that, like, just comes to mind that I think is not Carrie Fisher related was Luke staring off into the two sunsets again. It's just like in my mind, I'm like, you hear the score that happened just like from A New Hope, you know, and I instantly think back to him as, you know, in the white outfit on Tatooine at 19 years old, you know, just staring off into the sunset, thinking about, like, what could be his future, like, dreaming about it, you know, being a dreamer, a farm boy, coming from nothing to become, you know, Luke Skywalker, the legend, and then him just fading away. And I love that, like, Rey and Leia both felt it and said he was at peace and had purpose, and he became the legend that is Luke Skywalker in that moment, and I loved it, and it made me teary because it's just like it had all the feels of Star Wars to me. So I was a fan of that.
Like, I think I had, like, when it showed him come out of, like, whatever state he was in to do that accurate projection of himself, I knew something was wrong, and I was like, would they really? And then, but the minute that you see the sunset and the look on his face, I'm like, yeah, they're going to.
Yeah,
they're going to go there.
I don't know if I said this, like, last week when we talked about it, but did anyone, like, think there was a ship on the horizon coming towards him? Like, there was, like, a blip on the sunset in the distance. No? Okay.
No.
That's fine.
I didn't see that. Doesn't mean that there wasn't. It just means now I need to see it a fourth time to be,
I'm thinking it was probably just, like, maybe they shot a real sunset, obviously. Maybe there was just something there that, you know, it was whatever. Upon other viewings, I was like, the blip is still there, but I don't think it means anything. Because it, you know, that's that.
But, yeah. My second scene that I get, like, really choked up about is the scene where Holdo goes to lightspeed through the ship.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That scene is heightened because the second time I saw it, I didn't realize this the first time because I was kind of hyperventilating for 2.5 hours. But I didn't realize Holdo doing the light speed move to basically, you know, sacrifice herself for the resistance intercuts with Finn and Rose almost getting executed and Rey and Kylo fighting for the lightsaber. Like, all of that happens immediately at the same time, and so there's this extra emotional punch to it because all three storylines kind of come to a giant
climax
of Act Two. Yeah. So it's a really cool moment. And she's the one who, as soon as she hits it to light speed, everything kind of just stops for a moment. And so it's her action that really pushes everything over. It's really cool. It's a really well edited scene.
Yeah, that scene is incredible. It is that and the page scene are the two that I keep thinking about so much. I'll stop and I'll think about it, and those are the two scenes that my mind gravitates back to. But yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right in that scene with Haldo going to lightspeed is the catalyst for propelling the last little bit of the film. Mm-hmm. Because without that move, without her making that choice, there is nothing to have stopped what was happening with Rey and Kylo, and then what was happening with Rose and Finn as well. Like, she literally jolted the last little bit of the story.
Yeah.
Essentially, the whole rebellion would have died at that moment.
Yeah.
If she hadn't have done
it's
that.
It's also cool to see that she did to Snoke's ship what Kylo did to Snoke.
Just cut in half.
And can I just, take the moment to just express how beautiful this movie was?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was beautiful.
The amount of shots that I would, it's art. I forget who said that about Rian Johnson. I don't know if it was Carrie Fisher, what have you, but, visually it was stunning, musically it was gorgeous. I was just that's why afterwards I probably couldn't process, because both visually and audibly I was just overwhelmed.
Yeah, you know, I guess to address the slightly longer feeling editing of the Carrie Fisher Mary Poppins sequence, I was thinking the second and third time I saw it that may have been one of the scenes where they asked John Williams to record it first and then they edited it, because I know that they wanted the Princess Leia scenes to really work, because they shot it before Carrie Fisher died, but they recorded the music after, and so I think he was like, I want the Princess Leia scenes to actually breathe musically first and then we'll edit accordingly. That was just a thought I had, because it really I think if you pay attention to the music in the scene, it doesn't seem as long as if you're just sitting there kind of like, okay, let's get this going. There were a couple other scenes that were that way too, but I noticed that.
And I nobody mentioned it on the last. It seems kind of silly when I think of it now, but in the instant where they sucked her out into space, I for a second thought that they had edited the film to take her out completely, and this was going to be the end of Leia.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that at first.
And I was and I started to get really emotional. I think I was shaking at that point. And then when I saw her start to twitch, I was like, hold on.
That was another thing. So the friend I saw it with last night, actually, this was my third time. It was her first time. She had the reaction I actually did the first time I saw it, which was when you see kind of Leia floating through space, it was like this moment of, it's okay, I'm ready. There was this sort of letting go, because you're obviously, because they cut away before that even happens. So you're under the impression oh yeah, there's no way, this is definitely it. And then, the unexpected happens and it's like, wow, this is cool. But at the same time, you're so I think, maybe in shock of what's going on that you're like, yep, this is great, but I'm not really quite sure what to think about it yet. And then coming out, I think, I don't know. I half love it, and I half think it's slightly absurd, but that's kind of okay.
So I do want to transition away from the stuff that made us feel emotional in The Last Jedi. And I want to talk a little about the...
Wait, actually, can I bring up one thing?
Ben, for you, we can do one more thing. Don't worry. We can't do just one more thing.
I'd actually never talked about what made me feel emotional, but if we're going to go the happy spectrum... My favorite scene that made me giggle uncontrollably was when Rey reaches out and Luke basically tickles her hand with a leaf.
Yeah.
And she's like, I feel
something. And then, I feel it.
And he's like, you feel it? And so in that moment, I was laughing so hard because it was all of a sudden not Rey and Luke, it was Daisy and Mark. You know, in that moment. So I guess the opposite spectrum of emotional. I laughed a little too much there. And then also,
I want something that I guess
we
haven't
brought up yet is when R2 projects Leia for Luke.
Oh,
that scene really got to me.
Yeah, that was
hard.
It was masterful on R2's part for no
really though,
because I don't think there's any one character within the Star Wars universe that knows Luke as well as R2 does.
Yeah, for sure.
So where everyone else is kind of like going around in circles trying to figure out like what, like Rey particularly, like what do I do to get Luke to feel emotionally attached to this fight? How do I get him to come back? And R2's just like, step aside, I got this.
It's like, let me reach into my memory.
I'll agree with you on that. So, I speaking of that scene between with Luke, kind of tickling Rey, if you will, to feel the Force.
I had to think wrong.
Tickling Rey. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with tickling, but I will say
it's just part of the training.
Yeah. Has anyone read The Legends of Luke Skywalker yet? No.
Not in full. No.
Okay. So there's a story in there about essentially a flea that used to live on Salacious Crumb that in Return of the Jedi is on Luke and he's speaking in Luke's ear during all the things that happen in Return of the Jedi on Jabba's palace. And he constantly said this flea is talking about how dumb Luke Skywalker is. And then he hears this voice and I was like, it's the Force speaking to me. Like, it like just like completely like buys into it. So when I saw that, instantly, I'm like, this feels exactly like the book, and it just tied together, and I absolutely love that scene. But I did want to talk about some of the other humor, and personally, I felt like a lot of it was more physical humor, kind of like a Buster Keaton-type style film for jokes, and actually, Brack here posted in our chat that one of his favorite is when Rey chops off the boulder, and it rolls down the hill and destroys one of the caretaker's wheelbarrow. And she's just standing there holding the handles. I love that because they're also like one of my other favorite scenes is like after she had shot the blaster at Kylo Ren and blew a hole in like the room, you just hear like the caretaker's like speaking gibberish, like angry at just freaking freaking out about like having to take care of the temple and and she's like, they don't like me very much. And Luke's like, I wonder why is that? Pretty obvious. You just blew a hole in a temple that's been there for thousands of generations. So
And for just such an emotional movie, there were a lot of funny moments.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, I can't wait for the outtakes with Rey versus the caretakers, because you know it's going to be something that was funny that they said, oh, we probably just don't need it because it's funny enough elsewhere. But I will say I like that the film had a lot of humor, and it wasn't just tied to the droids. Like, we didn't have a lot of BB-8 humor, R2 or C-3PO humor that we've seen in the other films. It was a lot of, like I said, a lot of physical comedy between Rey.
I gotta say, C-3PO's humor was pretty good in this movie, though.
It was. It was very dry.
Really, C-3PO. Especially when he starts giving Poe the odds and he gets interrupted, but he finishes anyway.
Because it's C-3PO. That's what he has to do. What'd you guys think about the Porgs and Chewie? The humor that happened there between those guys.
You know, it was pretty great.
I kind of wanted to see. I was a little sad Chewie went hungry because the porgs and their cuteness.
I like to think he ate it anyway.
You like to think he ate it anyway. He kind of hid away until he went to the Falcon and just chomped on it. Yeah,
like totally. I mean, punched
over in a corner.
ashamed of himself.
It's nice because now that we have some porgs on the Falcon itself, Chewie won't go hungry.
Oh, wow.
It's a traveling snack.
It's takeout.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Bad jokes
did
on
you,
this.
Did you bad see, jokes here. Did you see why there are porgs in the film?
The reason because of the what do you call it, the puffins that were on?
Yeah, so they couldn't. There was absolutely no way that they could edit around or remove the puffins from Skellig Island when they were filming on Ahch-To. there were just too many, and they were everywhere, and they got in everything. There was absolutely, there was just no way. So they basically, that's why there's porgs in there.
It was, so during the wide shots, when you hear porg and see flying, it's actually a puffin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nice. It's funny, because puffins are roughly that size.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. What they were inspired by. That was one of the first things, because Ryan Johnson talked about it. It's like, when he went to Skellig Island for the first time, he saw the puffins, and it inspired the porg character. So they had a very practical reason to be there. But I don't think I'd want to eat puffin, so maybe I wouldn't want to eat porg. But Chewie does, obviously. Any other humorous moments? I will say one of my favorites is right at the very beginning with our boy Poe Dameron there talking about, like, waiting for Hux. Just because that's his character 100%. And every time I see it, totally. especially since I saw it so many times this opening weekend, I feel like a lot of people hadn't seen it yet, and you just don't expect that right at the beginning of a Star Wars film. I guess we should, because we saw that in The Force Awakens, but like it went on for much longer.
Drastic though, it wasn't one line.
This one was sequence. And then it went straight into action, which I just loved. So
this was my favorite opening since Revenge of the Sith.
Oh yeah, probably one of my favorites.
It's like a battles. James Bond kind of opening. It's like, let's open with the huge action set piece, and then we'll move into the plot after that.
Yeah, I like. Well, again, we talked about a little James Bond action sequence. I also liked, humor-wise, I want to say this because I posted it for you guys here earlier. So Mark Hamill had a second role in The Last Jedi. And for those of you who don't remember, he was the wobbly, drunk little alien that was all CGI, putting coins in BB-8. And before I knew that was Mark Hamill actually doing that character, I really just thought it was really funny that BB-8 is on this casino and someone thinks he's a slot machine, since we see slot machines that look kind of similar to what BB-8 looks like. And he's just taking the gold coins from this guy who's angry that he's not, you know, not winning off of BB-8.
I got super Peter Jackson vibes from that scene. Just like his brand of humor within a serious epic movie. Did anybody else? Maybe it's just me, and I'm just comparing it unnecessarily to other things, but
It didn't seem like a Peter Jackson type joke or anything like that. It felt like it felt in place for what we knew Canto Bight was supposed to be like.
And I
liked it.
I feel like it. There's like every once in a while, I don't know if it's in the original or just the remastered one of George Lucas, like the original trilogy, where like you say in like Return of the Jedi, and it pans down to Jabba. Maybe it's not Jabba's hut, but there's a scene where like you see these creatures do some weird things, and then it moves on to the actual story. Like it was this weird transition thing, and it's just like this random creature who has no role, just doing something funny in that moment, and then moving on.
Yeah, you're talking about the frog on Tatooine that eats the dude. So, that's why I said, like, when I reflected back on The Last Jedi and compared it to Empire Strikes Back and to some of the other films, the humor, even though it wasn't brought on mostly by the droids that we were kind of used to, a lot of it actually feels like it fits in place. And a lot of the criticism I've heard from people is that it was too funny. It was too slapstick. But it really wasn't when you compare it to other Star Wars films, if you like really look at them side by side.
Yeah, I think the one thing after three viewings that, you know, because a lot of it, I think, it felt less jarringly funny the second and third time I saw it. But the one thing that actually still does bother me, and I'll see if it still does, like, in a couple months, but I really don't like how, I'm okay with Luke tossing the lightsaber at the beginning, but I don't like that it was played for laughs.
I don't know if it was played for laughs. I think it was like
people laughed in all three of my showings.
Well, I'm sure people did, but I think it was actually when I have to, you know, I have very strong opinions about Luke Skywalker, and I have an article from Vanity Fair where Mark Hamill says he did not agree with Ryan Johnson on it. But when I read Ryan Johnson's response to Mark Hamill about it, I understand this Luke Skywalker, and I accept it wholeheartedly because of it, but it's one of those things where I think that kind of sets the tone of Luke's character. Caitlin called him a grumpy old man earlier, and that's kind of what it is. He's like, I have no need for this. Poof, throw it away.
Right. And like, I'm, again, like, I'm okay with it. It's just, I think it was, because he had also had not spoken yet in the movie. After I kind of knew what was going to happen going in the second time and had, you know, my expectations were, oh, I know what's going to happen, so I'm going to just watch this and enjoy it. I don't know, like, he could have just angrily tossed it a different direction instead of, like, the whoosh, off the cliff kind of cartoony way. Because, again, he's still, like, what is he thinking at that moment? Like, crap, yeah. I'm not going to go down this path again. Like, it's really kind of dark.
I agree with you. Like, honestly, as I'm thinking about it right now, obviously it's holidays time right now, and it kind of reminds me of Jim Carrey's portrayal of the Grinch in How the Grinch Stole Christmas, like, as he
storms off. Right, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. Like, I guess if you're trying to portray Luke as a Grinch kind of old man, like, it works. Like, I guess that can be it, but I don't know.
Sure, I'm sure that's the thought process Rian Johnson went through.
I'm reaching here a little.
So, that scene, for me, the first time I saw it, I kind of had that immediate kind of shock loss value to it. Where I was like, that was the last thing I was expecting him to do, but it made complete sense that he would do it. But in subsequent viewings, after having seen, I guess, how the, like, even looking back at The Force Awakens, what that lightsaber now represents to Kylo Ren and just throughout the film in general, like, it's an icon. It's such a huge weight that it kind of, like, it gets sadder. Like, him tossing it and throwing it away is a much sadder moment for me in subsequent viewings than it was in the first. It's not funny. It wasn't funny to me in the second or third viewing. I think the laugh that I got the first time around was just purely from shock of being like, oh my god, did he just do that?
Yeah, also because our expectations, again, were like, this is going to be epic. Like, what's he going to say? And instead of saying something, he does something and then walks away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, it really works because there's so much in that silence, in that action that is being said that is more than words ever could. It's just, because think about what that represents in terms of, like, whose lightsaber it was, what it means to Kylo Ren. And we know that Luke is very much aware that that lightsaber means something massively important to Kylo Ren, because it's the reason why he uses it when he projects himself at the end on Krayt. Like, he chose that lightsaber specifically to go up and face off against Kylo Ren for a reason. Like, that was actually the moment when he steps out, when he's talking to Leia and it's on his belt, I realized immediately that he wasn't real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, considering, I was like,
yeah, it's amazing how many dead giveaways there are and that I didn't catch any of them at all.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't.
Well, no, yeah, especially since, like, that's one of those things, like, he hasn't had that lightsaber, and you also have to remember, like, they also showed you kind of preview that the Luke that you see at the end with the short hair and the darker beard is the same Luke that you saw in Kylo Ren's remembrance,
The immediate giveaway for me was the lightsaber when it was, like, it was on his hip, on his belt, and I was like, oh, but that was just destroyed.
Yeah, I'm not that attentive the first time I see a movie. Like, usually, like, literally, I think I've said this before. Yeah, like when Han Solo walked out onto the bridge, lightsaber
represents just in general, in, like, it's represented a lot in previous Star Wars films, but specifically in this trilogy so far, it's represented such a huge thing, a huge, like, symbol, that it just, that first little bit when Luke throws it away is a lot more emotional to me in subsequent viewings than it was the first time, once I got over that initial shock moment.
And, like, just for, like, he closes himself off from the Force. Like, so when he knew at the at the beginning, when we first meet Luke in episode 4, he has very little knowledge of the Force, and yet somehow it's instinctive to him. So the amount of times, or like how long and how much effort he had to put in to fully close him off from the Force, that nobody else could, like Rey sitting beside him, couldn't even detect him. So he clearly like is just not interested. So like, knowing he put that much effort, it shouldn't be a surprise that he finds this, and especially how he feels about the legend of the Jedi. It's no wonder he threw it.
Yeah, like it plays to the grumpy old Luke that we get on the island until he has to change of heart to kind of embrace his destiny, embrace the legend that is Luke Skywalker to help save the Resistance when we see him at the end. I think, is there anything else humor that we need to talk about, guys? I'm trying to think about what else in the film. Again, I don't have it for reference. I did enjoy the humor, like I said, on Canto Bight. Specifically also, we talked a little about Mark Hamill's drunken character. But I even liked DJ's interaction with BB-8 and BB-8 taking out all the guards. Or BB-8 and DJ still in the ship. And he's like, you stole the ship too. This is your ship. So kind of, and BB-8 kind of as a droid, like responds, going like, "Wait, what?" Like I not doing it on purpose, but he did kind of steal it. So I find it it's just like fun little humor bits that were throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, is there anything else? The bit where Finn and Rose are explaining to Poe their plan and telling him like how they're being tracked, and Poe is about to like open his mouth to say something, and Finn is basically like, "No, you can't blow it up."
Yeah, it's like, "No, you can't do that."
Yeah.
You can't blow it up because they'll start training from another ship. I like that. It's just really fun. Like, I think this film had a good balance of it. And again, I think on first viewing, I felt like it may have had too much humor. At least that was my personal opinion.
Yeah,
but after multiple viewings, I feel like, again, when you compare it to other Star Wars films, it actually was fairly balanced in the way it should have been. So I think Rian Johnson did, he did his homework. I almost feel like he may have done too much homework. Like it was very well crafted.
Yeah, I remember walking out of Force Awakens saying, "Wow, I didn't realize how much I missed Star Wars being funny." Because Force Awakens definitely had those moments. I think they were way more subtle. Like, they were less, like, out front and stuff like that. But I think this one, again, because it was less subtle with the humor, I walked out the first time thinking, like, whoa, that was a bit, I don't know what to think about that, because it was really dark, but at the same time, they played some stuff for laughs. But I agree with you, in subsequent viewings, it got a lot less in that way.
Yeah. Side note, completely off topic, but for some reason, I have this attachment to Gwendolyn Christie. So even though we're supposed to absolutely loathe Captain Phasma, I got super ecstatic when she showed up.
Yeah, I was a little sad that we had a Phasma book, a Phasma comic series, and then she just barely showed up.
Well, I mean,
it made me feel that's a lot why like Boba we had Fett.
Those.
Yeah, I feel like that's what we had, but it makes me like, Phasma is Boba Fett of this trilogy. Like, just like you had her in Boba Fett and Empire Strikes Back, where you're just a tiny bit. I'm like, that's except it. Like, I want to know more. I want to see more.
I think it was my attachment.
There was so much in this film that was about hubris and ego and how that can be someone's downfall more than anything else.
Literally.
And the fact that, yeah, basically, it was a very interesting way to take her out, because there was a certain cockiness to her that thought that there was absolutely no way going one-on-one with Finn that she would ever lose. And, I mean, by all rights, she probably shouldn't have. But at the same time, that was what took her off guard, because, there was no way that she could ever kind of see that happening. It was just, death isn't always glorious, right? Yeah.
We'll see if she's gone for sure. She survived the trash compactor and blowing up of a whole planet. I don't know if she's gone 100% yet.
I mean,
all right, guys.
Darth Maul survived.
And yeah, Darth. Like I said, I'm not sure Snoke's gone completely yet. I really don't know. We'll find out.
Because we've learned from Star Wars, if you get cut in half, there's you're definitely a chance he'll come back.
Although yeah. I will say, you know, his tongue sticking out on the floor did kind of tell me that he's probably dead. But maybe his leg survived. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Ben.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.